This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. This is your host, Chris Hoff, and we are now at episode number 73. And I've had a little bit of a break. It's been a couple of months since we've posted a podcast. Sorry about that. Life just was life. And so thank you all for hanging in there with me and listening now. We have a special one for you today. We actually have another in-studio guest. It's not very often I get to have in-studio guests. But today we're doing something a little different. I have my friend and colleague, Mr. Brian Doster, with me today. You all might remember Brian from, I don't even remember what episode it was. Do you remember the episode number?
I don't. But it was,
it Brian was and Don Marie did a piece on Kanye West, sorry. And around really mental, what we're going to be talking about today, mental health stigma. Mm-hmm. And I know that's something you're passionate about, destigmatizing, sure. Seeking help, therapy in your own community and also just in general. Absolutely. And so we're going to talk about destigmatizing therapy, mental health today. But before we get there, what do you think of Kanye's Sunday services these days?
You're going to put me on the spot. I think good for Kanye. That's my politically correct response to the Kanye West situation. It's clearly he's tapping into some sense of spirituality that is hopefully helping him kind of walk through life. Mm-hmm. I think that I have my own personal issue with it, and that's just based on how people are centering him. Hmm. In the faith world, right, and so that's a whole topic in and of itself. Yes.
Well, I've been reading your Facebook feed, and you've been getting a lot of pushback from folks about your controversial viewpoints. But
yeah folks don't like when I kind of challenge that perspective. They want me to be supportive and say good job, Kanye. But to me, Kanye's not doing anything new. There are a lot of gospel artists that have done kind of the collaborations that he is doing now. But, you know, Kanye has a heavy presence. And so when he interjects something into the world, many people respond.
Yeah, right. I do have to say, I watched the live feed when he was at Coachella, and it was quite... I don't know. It pulled you in a way. I thought it was pretty interesting. So
I remember you saying that. I remember you saying you were moved by it.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
and I'm not surprised that people are moved by that. I mean, I grew up in the church, right? And mm-hmm. I understand the power of these faith songs, right, that really carry people through kind of heavier times in their life. And so I'm not surprised that it is reverberating across cultures, right, especially if you've never had a Black church experience, right? Mm-hmm. And the Black church experience is just unique in and of itself, mm-hmm. right? And so Kanye bringing that to the world, right, I understand someone saying this is quite moving, right?
Right.
So I hats off to him.
Yeah, I hadn't had a Black church experience prior to that too. So right. Although, you know, listening to gospel music here and there, but
yes,
yeah, right. So and it was I did find it quite moving. Yeah. So okay, before we hit record, you mentioned and I told you to hold that thought. You mentioned that you went to a Black therapist meetup in Los Angeles yesterday, and I was wondering what was that like? How was that?
Yeah, so it's actually through a contact that you referred to me, Stevon Lewis, back in the beginning of 2019.
Oh, okay.
There was a gentleman who was attempting to build a database of therapist of color, mm-hmm. black therapist, and you sent the email to me so that I could add my name to it. So this year he decided to host a black therapist meetup at the Hilltop Coffee and Kitchen event space in Inglewood. And it was about 20 to 30 people there, right. and you could feel the energy and the excitement of just seeing one another, right? Knowing that we were in this space together, and that sometimes it feels like as a therapist of color, you feel like a unicorn, right? Mm-hmm. And so seeing each other and talking with individuals, it was great. I had to kind of go into my extrovert. You know, that's a struggle for me. So I found the person who was the number one introvert in the room, and I connected with her, and we talked the whole time, and I stayed for about an hour. But it was great to see that this young dude is attempting to create some type of community for us to come together.
Yeah, when's the next event, or how do people get plugged in if they're in the area? Or?
I am going to, hopefully he doesn't mind, I'm going to give out his information. It's info@Stevon, S-T-E-V-O-N, Lewis, LEWIS.com. And so send him an email. He seems so open and exuberant about what this could be. So if you're interested, I would shoot him an email.
Yeah, great. All right. We were talking about, we've been wanting to have a conversation for a long time and hope to continue to have these conversations.
Sure.
But we were talking about what do we want to talk about today. And I think it's fitting because since I've known you, you've been very vocal about fighting mental health stigma. Yeah. And so we decided we were going to kind of, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, has an article out by Luna Greenstein, 9 ways to fight mental health stigma. And I thought we would kind of just, go through these 9 ways and just kind of get, your take, my take, and just kind of talk about what we think about these ways of fighting mental health stigma.
Sounds good.
Yeah, cool. All right. So first one is to talk openly about mental health. I think this is an interesting one. I had the opportunity to be interviewed by the Wounded Healer podcast, Sarah over at the Wounded Healer podcast. You should all check that out. Recently, that's probably going to launch sometime soon. But the format allowed me to kind of tell my own story of, my particular struggles, being in recovery and, that kind of thing. I think that's helpful. I know in a lot in the psychotherapy world where there's this kind of mythology that gets transferred over time that we are to be blank slates. We can't really share our stories. That's born out of a particular model, psychoanalysis, yeah. but it gets propagated across all kinds of ways of working. Right. And it's not that I'm saying, that we need as therapists need to go center ourselves and our experiences, and then go just dump and think that we have some sort of expert knowledge because we have experience with woundedness or hardship or mental illness of some sort, that kind of thing. But also I think there is something to attending to power. And I wonder what your take is on attending to power in sharing our stories or our struggles or talking openly about mental health.
Yeah. So I think about how can I be a therapist and not be willing to talk openly about my own experience, right? And my own kind of what drew me into the space. And I think it's important that we do that because I think by talking about it openly, it normalizes the intentionality behind therapy, right? It normalizes it in a way that says see, I look like you, right? In some way, right? Mm-hmm. My story sounds similar or familiar to you, right? And because of that, I want to invite you into this space, right? I want to invite you into being willing to share your experience. So that's what comes to me when I think of growing up in, I'm going to keep referencing faith because it was such a big part of my life. Sure. And I think I know that because of my faith experience, that also was birthed out of this wanting to talk about destigmatizing mental health. Because a lot of times, from a faith perspective, prayer is supposed to be mental health, right?
Right.
The pastor is supposed to be my counselor, right? Or my therapist. Now, he may not have any education and he may not know how to actually lean in and be. Sometimes they don't even want to go to the hospital visit, but now they are supposed to be able to be my therapist. And I always knew that there was something not always safe about talking to my pastor, and not to take anything away from faith leaders, but faith leaders sometimes are carrying so much of everybody else's life, including their own, that they don't always know how to center in a way that is effective for me to be able to share. And so based on that experience, I knew I needed another space to be able to talk and name things in my life. And so therapy was that for me.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Next up is educate yourself and others. What do you think about this?
Educate yourself and others. I think that, I mean, how can we not? I did a presentation at Fullerton, Cal State
That's
Fullerton,
right?
Around destigmatization. And even as I said in that space, and I remember one of the main pictures that I showed was, this is the image of mental health or mental illness. And I showed the picture of Britney Spears with the shaved head, right? Mm-hmm. And you could see how people really kind of, it connected, right? Because that's kind of what we carry. And so when I started to talk about how mental health is about your, you know, your male person or your teacher, right? These very regular people, when we educate people in that way, as I said, they can start to see themselves in those same people. So that's the importance for me about educating myself and others about it.
Great. Yeah. And we were, before we hit record as well, I was telling you a story about in supervision where I was working with one of our therapists at California Family Institute, and I don't know how to go in. I don't want to go into too much detail, but a very young person, found themselves in coming to therapy, and one of the main concerns, and this is a young person, one of the main concerns was, I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. And so there's some educating going on, and not maybe in the traditional formats, but somehow people are being exposed to ideas of going to therapy still in this day and age as some sort of deficiency or some sort of you're crazy or something like that, you know, some, just the language that's being used. And, we have to educate, right? How do we begin to educate even at that earlier age where they're getting the other education, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so,
Even if we talk about schools, right? How do schools bring in a different way of looking at therapy, and not just for the bad kid,
corrective actions or whatever. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we see that even with what Michelle Myers, the restorative justice piece, being willing to have different conversations with students that does not allow them to internalize themselves as a problem, right? But they can have a conversation that says, here's what I'm feeling, this is what I experienced, right? So we as educators, we as therapists need to be willing to bring that into a different space as well.
Wonderful. Okay, next up, they say, be conscious of language.
We just talked about it, right?
Yeah, I think, This is what I think. And this might be controversial. I have this thing. I have this interesting relationship with Instagram, right?
You do. I'm jealous. You do.
I mean, I'm all over it. I'm active on it a lot. And I'm also reading a lot of stuff. And I think, you know, a lot of it in the therapy world, I think, is really well-meaning and trying to be helpful. But there's still a lot of pathology or pathological language or language of deficit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always followed up with something, but the language and I just did a YouTube video. Here's a plug for those YouTube. You can find a video I just did on YouTube on professional talk, right?
Yes.
And how we use professional talk in particular ways, and it can, if we don't pay attention to it, it can have effects.
Yes.
And those effects can, you know, everything from power imbalances to disrespecting clients, to misunderstanding clients, to just not really, you know, just kind of categorizing people in particular ways. And worst case, it's really just objectifying them in particular ways, right? And so, and that's that language of, you know, diagnosis and stuff like that. And I understand many of you that are listening are probably working in systems where you're required to do those things, but how do we also, alongside that, counter that language? Because I think that language is playing a large part in continuing to stigmatize people that are seeking help.
Yeah, I mean, it takes away their humanity. It takes away their agency, right?
Right, right.
When you hear someone say, "That's crazy, you're psycho, you drive me crazy, you're paranoid, you're schizophrenic," right? It's, I mean,
narcissistic. That's the one that's getting thrown around a lot, right?
Well, you know why, but yes. Absolutely. To name someone as narcissistic, I think it's easy to use that language, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's easy to see someone through this lens because it provides distance from them. If I can just see you as crazy, because if I actually see you as just, man, something wild is happening for you, right? There's something that you're struggling with, and mm-hmm. I want to know more about it. But if I see you as crazy, then I can walk away.
Yeah.
I can ignore it. Mm-hmm. I can place it in its own box. So language totally matters. And as therapists, we probably can do a better job of that. One of the things, how dare I say that? Anyways, one of the things that I struggle with is the term mental illness, right?
Yeah, like, right. We are using it.
Oh,
so, yeah,
right. I struggle so much with mental illness because it just, you talk about stigmatizing. When you think of someone who's mentally ill, you think of hospitals having to be locked up, right? That's what comes to mind for me. And mm-hmm. I think people see that.
Yeah, we are. I guess we should say we are using that language. It isn't our preference, though. I
right.
think both of our preferences, even in California Family Institute's website, you know, I was intentional about, you know, it's a center for relational health,
yes.
not the other stuff, right?
Yes.
And I was trying to avoid particular language. And maybe that's an example for our listeners about how we might really kind of attend to the language we're using. So, and you really raised a great point. I think that's like, and that's for maybe a conversation for another time, but how do we as therapists also don't fall victim to reducing people in that way, to make it easy to dismiss them, to categorize them. And because in our world right now, as you know, we have a lot of conversations, you and I, just about how that's happening in our world in particular ways. So
right.
For a conversation for another time. But okay, next up is encourage equality between physical and mental illness.
Man.
What do you think?
We live in a society that has always privileged physical health, right?
Yeah, right.
Physicians are seen as the creme de la creme of our world. They're paid that way. They're respected that way. When someone finds out a person is a doctor, it's like, oh man, you went through all of those years of schooling and oh, you like almost like you sacrificed to know how the body works and blah, blah, blah. When it comes to mental health, though, and how we view that, there's this second-rate feeling about it, when I hear people talk about it. And quite honestly, for me, I think mental health, I say this all the time, mental health is so much more. There's an equalness. I'll say that. I'll leave it at that. There is an equalness. I can't talk about it being more than if we're talking about equality. But I do think that we could do a better job of lifting it up. Even our government could do a better job of supporting it, and not only supporting it when we have mass shootings, right? Because that's the only time that we really hear our government officials wanting to talk about it, right? And if we could start to privilege it as well, as much or as well as we privilege physical health, I think more people will try to access it, right? People won't necessarily, people don't access physical health as much, but I think more will if we start to privilege it.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. Next up is show compassion for those with mental illness. I don't really like how that's languaged, but show compassion for those struggling with some stuff. And what do you think? I mean, that's no brainer.
Right. Like, I mean, I think you can speak better to this than me, but how do we be in community with people when they are struggling with relational experiences, right? Mm-hmm. How do we support one another, right? Opposed to, oh my God, he's sad again, or oh my God, mm-hmm. she's anxious again. Mm-hmm. How do we, I like the word compassion, right? Because we all are struggling with something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So maybe you can say more about that.
Well, I was just thinking a couple of things. I was thinking about how I was sharing it, like on that podcast interview yesterday, where they were asking how I deal with the trolls that I get, like, and the haters on the YouTube channel and stuff like that. And I say, typically, you know, I can kind of view it as, when I'm doing better, I can view it as like, I can show compassion for people that these are people are hurting. They live in an uncertain world. They're scared. There's changes. The world's restructuring in particular ways. And I can show them compassion. Sometimes then I can't at all. And I'm, you know, don't like it. And then I was thinking, I practice Zen, as you know, and yeah. I'm going to bring up a Christian thing though. Okay. About Paul's thorn in his side. Right?
So, oh, yes.
And that was brought up in this Dharma talk that I was listening to my teacher gave this morning. And, you know, and I was thinking, don't we all have like a thorn in our side, right? Or to use that metaphor or that piece of literature. And when we do that, I think, and when we have a real understanding of our own place and precarious place in this world and all of that, then we can maybe see people in the same way. Mm-hmm. But there's less of that. It's because of going back to the language piece and how we're reducing people and othering people and stuff like that. But when we can see our own stuff, I think it makes it much easier to be like
compassionate.
Yeah.
I agree.
What do you think? Yeah. All right. Choose empowerment over shame is the next one. What do you think about this one?
Choose empowerment over shame.
I think that's tricky.
Right. So
I don't mean that about, yeah, sure. That makes sense on its surface. Yeah. Right. But
right.
Yeah, but
even here,
empowerment's tricky too.
I mean, here it says, I fight stigma by choosing to live an empowered life. To me, that means owning my life and my story and refusing to allow others to dictate how I view myself or how I view or I feel about myself. I think that takes work. That's what I would say, right?
Yeah. And I think, and I'd be careful to, because it's kind of an individualistic position too sometimes. I don't know how relational that is in some ways, right? Because we do have to move through the world. And unfortunately, I know we like to think it's an individual effort, but I think it's very much a relational thing that we're being in the world. And I don't know.
Can you say more about this? Because this idea of individual versus relational, right? Can you say more about
that? Yeah, well, I'm just thinking about, I'm thinking a lot of things, right? Somebody told, well, Michel Foucault, I'm going to really paraphrase it, but, you know, said something, the easiest way to control somebody is to make them an individual. Mm. And I think this, I think in our current culture, this empowerment thing is individualizing people in particular ways, and it's easier to get captured by things, I think, ideas or things when you're kind of put in that position of like you need to stand on your own too. It all almost comes from that meritocracy thing too, or yes, the neoliberal position, however you might want to language it, where you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and yes, you'll be okay.
Yes.
And I don't know how accurate that really is. Is kind of where I'm coming at, and I don't know how accurate, how well that's going to fight shame.
Yes.
When you get kind of individualized in that way.
Well, because I'm having to fight it on my own, opposed to having this kind of community.
Yeah, community of concern or people that are can walk the path with you, whatever you kind of be going through at that moment. Right. Yep. Yeah. And so that's why I was kind of, that's a tricky way. It sounds good.
Yes.
And I think you see a lot of that on Instagram, going back to Instagram, this idea of choose empowerment over shame. Rah, rah, go get it.
The Instagram therapist that yes, you wrote about.
Yeah. And so, and I think that sets people up in a particular way. And I'd be more interested in how we can make that more relational. And I don't want to by any means, discount people's, owning their life and their story and all that. That's because I work from a narrative perspective, right? But also I'm very interested in circulating stories and creating communities of concern and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, and I think you said something powerful at the beginning of us talking about this particular, this choosing empowerment. You said you think it's more of an individual, like each person has their own story of how they tell this particular piece, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much, everybody may not live in that space. Mm-hmm. I'm probably more of I need community of support, right? Mm-hmm. That can help me.
Well,
help
I keep trying to tell you that.
Well, I'm learning. Anywho, moving on.
Yeah. I'm gonna... Sorry, it's inside joke.
Inside, yes.
All right. Okay. Be honest about treatment is the seventh one.
Yeah.
And I'll say something about it. I did an Instagram story where I just filmed, and I did a couple of them a couple weeks in a row. At that time I was seeing my therapist on Fridays, and I was just like, hey, it's Friday, I'm seeing my therapist. And I really got a lot of DMs from that, like people saying, I really appreciate you doing that. So, yeah. And I think that's what they're saying, like that here I am, Dr. Chris Hoff, but I'm, showing you walking into my therapist's office. Yeah. Right. And I think that's capturing that being honest about treatment, because a lot of people hide that stuff. Right.
Yeah. We're on the same path because I'm currently seeing a therapist, and I think to myself, like, why would I be afraid to walk up and be like, oh, hey, and even say to somebody, that's my therapist. Right. Right. Again, back to the equality of physical health and mental health, right? There would never be a time if I saw my doctor, doctor out in public, that I would have to be concerned about saying, oh, hey, Dr. So-and-so, good to see you, man.
Right.
Or
right.
Good to see you.
Great point.
Right? And yet with therapy, there's this hiding, and we support it. As therapists, we drive part of this stigma of the hiddenness about seeing us, and I really want people to this is where I want people to be empowered, like if you see us out there, hey, right. I'm kidding, but I think there is something very empowering about being able to share your story about seeing a therapist.
Great. Wonderful. This next one, the second to last, is let the media know when they're being stigmatizing.
Hmm. I think it goes back to what I was talking about with when we hear it in the media, it's usually when it's in these extreme situations, right? And all of that supports the language matters, right? Because that's the only time that it seems our media wants to talk about it. What I want to talk about, though, is how I'm hearing it more in this positive realm through the hip hop realm, right? Okay. And how that media or that art form is helping to really support it. And that there have been several times that I've been in a space with college students where they are referencing these pop culture icons, these hip hop stars, and how their words are really helping them to be present and be or even seek therapy. So while the media at times leans into stigmatizing language, it is also important to recognize that there are others trying to shift that too.
Yeah, great. And I've been coming at it with some pushback too, quite honestly. Excuse me, from a place of, I've been kind of being critical of Instagram, like the whole, as you know, the Instagram kind of therapy thing. And trust me, it's great stuff's happening. People are getting connected. That's all good. The intentions are there. But if we were to look at language sometimes and some of these ideas about, you know, choosing empowerment over shame that we were talking about, and then also the language and kind of this reduction that happens in Instagram, that it's all kind of just this reframe. Mm-hmm. So I've been kind of, you know, critical of when the language gets kind of too, you know, pathologized or there's kind of this, you know, this is what's wrong with you, buy my course and I'll fix you kind of thing. Then I'll be a little critical. So, because that's the new media, social media is the new media. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, there's been a mad rush onto all kinds of mental health folks, onto these kinds of platforms. And, you know, sometimes we should be a real self-reflective about how we're using them and what kind of language we're using, how are we approaching people and their lives, and are we being reductionist or are we expanding, or those kinds of things, right?
For sure. And I think the fact that we do have access to all of this different media, I think it's easier for us to kind of call people out. In a nice way. I'm not talking about cancel culture, but being able to name, hey, I noticed this is what was said on your program, or I noticed that you posted this. Maybe if we could think about it in this way.
Well, I remember you came to me one time about a Instagram psychologist or something, and you were gonna send them a message about some of the language that they were using. Remember that?
Oh, you didn't bring that up.
Did you ever do it?
I never did. Even in this moment, I feel some kind of way because it's still happening. Yeah, I think if they're listening, hopefully, you know, let's not put our client's stories, even if it doesn't have their name, or, you know, how do we ensure that we don't use our social media platforms to put our client's stories out into those public spaces, right? In a way that kind of lifts us up as experts, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I never want to feel that. I think we, sit in a very unique place that people, allow us to hear these stories. And so if it's not something you would be willing to tell them, that you shared their story, mm-hmm. as private as it may be, mm-hmm. in the public sphere, mm-hmm. I think it's important that we respect them and not do that. So,
in the effort of building ourselves up, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Finally, at the number 9, don't harbor self stigma.
Yeah. I don't think. Oh, I'm stuck on that one because I think I mean, it's self-explanatory that the goal here, the goal of all of this conversation is for us to really be able to step out of being able to think there's something wrong with us because we're seeking therapy, right? And so I think it goes back to the relational aspect, being able to have a community of support that says, you know, it's okay. Sometimes we need to talk to somebody, and maybe our friends or our partners don't have the capacity, and that there is a space called therapy that it's available to you. And so I don't know, it's easy for us to say don't self-stigmatize, but if we are in relationship with others who can support us, I think that for me is the most important part.
Yeah, and also I think we have to be very aware that it just goes back to that individual piece, right? That we live in a world, society, culture that often has us internalizing, you know, not so great things about ourselves, our genders, our sexualities, or whatever it may be. And so, you know, to do that individually, yes, absolutely. We have to do this in relationship with others because the messages oftentimes are so strong and easy to internalize and are very destructive. And
yeah. If I had a magic wand, right? My magic wand would say, take away stigmatizing language around mental health and allow everyone to see the beauty of it, right? But we don't have that magic wand. And the reality is that it's going to, this stigmatizing language is a part of the culture. It's just a part of how we, how it shows up in this space. And so all we can do is be able to encourage people to say that even in the face of stigmatizing language, how do you not have to hold that as yours, right? And even when you are considering to hold it as yours, remember that there are people who are willing to have a conversation with you to help you hold it and deconstruct it and show up in a different space. So
yeah, wonderful. All right. Well, thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Dr. Hall.
So if our listeners want to reach out to you and find you.
I have a website, BrianDostertherapy.com. I also have an Instagram.
Yay.
It is, look, this is the bad thing. I'm looking it up right now so that I can tell you guys what it is, but it's Brian, B-R-Y-A-N dot the, T-H-E, dot therapist, and that is on Instagram. So if you want to check me out, I'm trying to do a better job. Dr. Hoff is trying to encourage me to be more present on a social media, but I would love to have you follow me and hopefully I will start to show some more content.
Okay. All right. Radical therapists, go show Brian some love on Instagram.
I want to just say thank you, Dr. Hoff, and thank you, the Radical Therapist, for allowing me to even take up space here. It's very much appreciated.
Wonderful. Okay, everybody. So this has been our show, and I want to thank you again for listening. Sorry for the break. We're going to get back on a regular schedule now. I got some time freeing up, so that looks good. don't laugh at me. And then, you know, what do I want to say? Please go rate and review the show. If you're on iTunes or whatever, we hear that's how we get out in front of people. Go do that. If you'd like some Radical Therapist stickers, send me an email at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. And go find the Radical Therapist on YouTube, on Instagram. After you go show Brian some love, go show the Radical Therapist some love on Instagram. And yeah, as always, I'm Dr. Chris Hoff. This has been the Radical Therapist Podcast. Thanks for listening.